Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 241.
Now that I live in the vast wilderness of farmland, I have witnessed strange and mystical events. One such event happens every time it rains. My house, and every house near me, have long trenches for the rain to collect in and be taken away. Actually, I don't know where the water goes. All I know is that it ends up leaving. Regardless, every time it rains along the banks of these trenches, suddenly tens of frogs appear. The frogs weren't there when the trenches were dry, but as soon as it rains, we end up with one of the plagues of Egypt. The same can be said about spiritual warfare. It can come up at any time, suddenly, from out of nowhere. This can lead to troubling times that can last for long periods of our lives. Christiana and her group keep running into this. Just when they face one fear or giant, another fear or giant appears. These lessons of Bunyan have to do with troubles in the Christian life and how through them we can endure the temptation to turn away. A good way to endure these times is to speak with a pastor or a trusted friend who is spiritually mature. But every person is different, and every trouble can seem different. How can others know exactly what we are going through? What if the advice that we are given sounds good, but doesn't really match up with who we are or what we're experiencing? What do we do when the wisdom of the world seems to sound better than the wisdom of Scripture and the Church? We will discuss these and other questions today on Theology Simply Profound.
Well, welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Tarullo. I serve as pastor here at Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church, currently in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And with me as well, of course, as always, is Rob McKenzie. Rob's an elder serving with me and with our other elders at Westminster. Rob, how's it going today?
It's going good. Having a frog-free day.
Currently. A frog-free? Oh, yes. So going back to your introduction, as you were talking about that, and you know those trenches that your moat really around your castle fill up with frog or fill up with water and then frogs. I just remember playing in those.
I mean, with the frogs?
Yeah, I mean they're great fun to go find frogs and play with them as a kid. I mean, we didn't have that particular kind of thing in our neighborhood, but they were around in other neighborhoods, and yeah, they were just really fun places to go find creatures and all of those scary things that you were talking about, that you find yourself scared of.
Well, I mean, the incredible thing about it is, like I said, now today it's sunny. It's been sunny for the last couple of days. My moat is pretty dry, so I go out there now. There's no frogs.
But so if it were to rain, wondering where they go.
Yeah, it's like, I wonder if like the lack of moisture, if they like shrivel up, do they become like the size of a grain of sand? And then when the water comes, like those little, the dinosaurs that you get, in the little packet you pop in water.
As soon as you said that, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. Is that what happens? Because all of a sudden it's just, there's
just
frogs everywhere.
It is.
Okay. That's what I thought. Yes. That's what I thought. So they're all frogs dehydrate to the point of their hibernation is dehydration.
They just, they sink in and then and then you just add water.
Learning so much out here. We actually found one of the poor frogs at one point must have hopped into our garage when it was open, and we found him completely dried out. It was like a little statue.
Dead?
And right in the well, I don't know, because
you didn't add water to find
dehydrated.
Out.
I should have added water, like a plant, and seen what happened. It's
are
really
you, but Rob, to me, are it's you now bizarre. A frog killer? Is that what I just heard? A frog?
No,
killer.
I did not kill a frog. I have killed snakes and lots of wasps and hornets and flies and things like that, but I did not kill the frog. The frog committed frogicide. If he is now demised, because we didn't know he hopped into our garage. Mm-hmm. He just was there, and we pulled out the car, and he had been under the car, and was this not? I mean, I seriously thought that it was like a little statue.
Stealer of
like
frogs.
Like a lawn ornament.
You trapped the frogs there on purpose. I hear you.
Wow. Wow. I am not a fan. I like the frogs are kind of cool. And when you, so it rains and then it, you know, it fills up and all of a sudden the frogs are just all over there. And I, if I walk down the trench, if I walk along the side, it's just blip, 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 as they jump into the water that's there. So it's kind of funny. I keep trying to get it, taking a picture of these frogs flying, but, I haven't gotten a good picture yet. I need to,
are they trying. Are they big bullfrogs? Like that, you know, make that sound at night that keep you up if you have your windows open?
No, okay. Not bullfrogs.
Okay.
At least, I mean, I've heard some frogs at times, but there, it hasn't that deep, very loud throated.
Yeah.
Frogs. No, I haven't heard that. Just the smaller frogs.
Sure. Well, I'm not sure how we got on frogs here. I think it was had to do with, that's right. You're experiencing the plague in your house. So
it's the plagues of Egypt that inhabit my palatial southern state.
Yes. And this is because
of the analogy that I made was just that, you know, it really does. It happens in life where you're going along and everything, you're having a great day. And then just out of the blue, something will happen that you just didn't expect. And it can, you know, it can devastate your life. I mean, it can devastate in the, like, just completely depress you or bring you into that place of sorrow. It just comes out of the blue. Just when, a lot of times when you think that, oh, things are going great. In the movie While You're Sleeping, the father says that, you know, in life, you're always trying to deal with all these troubles that are going on. You're trying to work them out throughout the day, and that you look forward to that 1 minute where everybody's good, everything's fine, and in that 1 minute is glorious because nothing or no problems whatsoever. And of course the son says to him, Pop, this is not that minute. I think that's kind of how our lives are. We're always juggling certain things. There's always something in our life that can get us, oh, I wish this was done. Somebody's sick in the family, or there's some financial problem, or the car's broken, or there's a plague of frogs, you know, that are trying to invade your house. Because I feel like this, where that I'm trying to get to that place where I finally get everything done that needs to be done. And all the issues sorted out that need to be sorted out. And you're always looking for that. And all of a sudden you realize, oh yeah, I'm in my 40s now. I'm still doing the same thing that I was doing 20 years ago, trying to get all the problems worked out. And, Christiana and the group, when they enter into the Valley of the Shadow of Death, which is what we're going to talk about today, it seems like they make it through. I mean, this is kind of a spoiler, but it seems like they make it through having gone through not as bad of a time of it as Christian had, with still a lot of fear and, worry that things are going to happen to them. But the trouble that they experience happens, just when they get out, just when they're done. You know, and you can almost hear them give this sigh of relief to get to the end. And then that's when real trouble starts. And I just think that that's really does kind of mark life where we finally get to the place. Oh, I'm so glad that's done. And then boom, this other thing happens. And it's just, it can really churn you in life.
Yeah. Well, thankfully though, Christiana and the pilgrims, as they're called quite a bit here, they have great heart with them. And I'm just curious, Rob, about the geography here, so to speak. Do we have the Valley of Humiliation, and then we have the Valley of the Shadow of Death. Mm-hmm. Is this one continuous valley? Is this, what do you think? Is this Shadow of Death a part of the same Valley of Humiliation, so therefore similar teaching moment here for Bunyan, but with a different sort of intensity, or a different along the same road, obviously, same valley, but with slightly different characteristics. What do you think is going on in that relationship just there, moving from one valley to another, which seems very similar?
Well, Bunyan kind of describes it in both ways. He talks about them being separate valleys, but then he also kind of refers to it as they moved toward the Valley of the Shadow of Death, as they walked further into the valley. Mm-hmm. So now, okay, so is it one long valley or is it two? It's geographically, the best way to describe it would be that there's one long valley that's created by this mountain range around them, these large hills that come into this valley. But these are two distinctly separate elevations of the long valley. So you have the Valley of Humiliation, and it's at one level, and then you kind of go down even further into the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And it also seems as if the Valley of Humiliation is open. So you have more fields that, think like, farmland, wheat fields and things like
that. Right,
right.
That's a good smaller one.
Smaller hills. Mm-hmm. And then when you go into the Valley of Shadow of Death, it's kind of has a covering, probably like foliage, a lot of trees. And because it seems, they're not going into a cave.
Right.
They're not going under the earth, but they are shrouded in darkness where sunlight has to work its way in to actually get sunlight in there.
Right. And because there is a difference in the way in which they are traveling through here from Christian in the past. And we're told that right from the get-go. And that is that they are traveling during the day when there is daylight, right? Which
right.
makes their time in the valley just that much easier. Mm-hmm. But not without its challenges still. And in particular for the children, which is interesting. I found this section through the humiliation, Valley of Humiliation last time to now in this section of the book, there's a lot more interaction with the children. We had Matthew last time get sick, right?
Right.
And that due to apostasy, or nearing apostasy rather, and he's killed by Dr. Skill. Dr. Skill. And then you now have another child getting sick, James.
Right.
But seemingly from a different ailment. What's his ailment?
Right. Well, Christiana even says that he starts to get sick, and Christiana, you can almost hear, the mother's intake of breath, like, now my next child is mm-hmm. getting sick, so is he going to apostatize? But she determines that it's because of fear. Remember when they're going through the Valley of the Shadow of Death, we actually have a much bigger description actually when Christian went through, but it's still the same valley. So when Christian went through, remember, it was dark, but when he finally gets light, he realizes that on both sides of him are these ditches. And he was very thankful that he didn't in the darkness fall off into these ditches. And so they've got these ditches. So they're walking a narrow path because they don't want to fall in, and they can hear up ahead is where the mouth of hell, and you can hear into hell and the torments of the people who are there.
Yeah.
You can also hear. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's right. And I kind of skipped that, and I shouldn't have, because we have a description, at least in mm-hmm. general. You said there's more description in the previous book, but there is a description in the language of they heard groaning as of dead men, very great groanings. They heard words of lamentation spoken as of some in extreme torment. And these things made the boys to quake. Women also looked pale and wan, but their guide bid them be of good comfort. So there is, right, we're being told that there is things that are making them afraid. And then mm-hmm. they continue a little further, and the ground shakes underneath them as though they're standing on something that's hollow, as though the crust of the earth is shaking and it could open up underneath them. They heard also hissing sounds as of serpents, yet nothing appeared. And so it's daylight, so they're walking around, but there's still these sounds that are frightening, as though something could happen at any moment, even such that the ground is unsteady under their feet. So yeah, that helps give more of the context as to why James might be afraid.
Yeah, Greatheart, who is of course guiding them through, that's their other. Well, actually, there's three. I was thinking before, there's two distinct differences that they, advantages that they have that Christian did not have, but there's really three. One is that it's daylight. So they can see, even though there's this kind of, I'm saying foliage, something that's blocking out a lot of the sun, they can still see because some of the sunlight's making it through. But the other advantage is that they have Greatheart. So they have a guide to take them through. And those two are mentioned. The other one is that they have each other. They have companions. You know, Christiana does talk about this a little later. She says, she laments how hard it would have been for Christian, how sad that he had to go through this alone. And she's thankful that she had the other people. But, just as Christian, it's really interesting because both Christian and Christiane and her group are going through this valley. And the main fear in this valley is what you could hear. It's not what actually happened, because Christian didn't physically get hurt. And this group doesn't physically get hurt, but they can hear, and even, it talks about dragons and several mythological creatures. I think even centaurs are talked about, and hobgoblins, and the idea of these minion demon, these little imp demons that cause trouble are talked about in the first book. And Christian, but he doesn't see them. He just hears them. And how much does our imagination run away with us when there might be something to truly be weary of, but because we can't see it, our imagination makes it much worse.
Yeah, and here, now you're right that they don't see anything at the beginning, but they do come to a point where they see something, an ugly thing. But before that, James is brought to a steadiness. He is given, a glass of spirits. Wow. My parents didn't give me a glass of spirits when I was a kid. here it's capitalized. So, the sense is, I think, something spiritual, that he had given her at the interpreter's house.
Yeah. Well, this had been sent. I believe this was sent with Greatheart on his return from the interpreter's house. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And along with some pills that Mr. Skill had left behind or had prepared for them.
Right.
And this revived James prior to almost an immediate Christiana seeing something yonder upon the road before us. And then Joseph asks about it, and she describes it as an ugly thing, she said. And then Greatheart refers to it as a fiend come upon them. And so now they begin to see something, which then quickly vanishes when they resist the devil. Because when you resist the devil, he will fly from you or flee from you, which is a great reference to James, of course, the letter of James. I found that in this, when we've started thus far, the description of moving our way into the valley of the shadow of death, you have two references to fear. Mm-hmm. You have James being afraid and healed from that. And then after, two references to resisting the devil, you then have an exhortation by Greatheart to fear not and to stand still and see what an end will be put to this also. So I actually, it's not just one. There's another reference I'm just noticing as well a little bit later. But you have these, I just thought it was interesting, right at the beginning of the Valley of the Shadow of, Death, by way of exhortation, by way of illustration of seeing one come through fear and then seeing the party of pilgrims resist the devil and the devil fleeing and seeing yet another come upon them, this being the lion. So you have the fiend in front and the lion from behind that they hear and then see, I think they see it. You can correct me. And when it sees that they will resist, it flees as well.
Right.
And so there's these instances of fear and resistance to the devil or to evil things, essentially. So what we might call mortification, right, of sin or battling against evil in spiritual warfare, which is so very often an internal thing. But still, we're that which is internal, we are seeing externally throughout this book in many instances. You see that resistance, that fight, we see accomplishment. We see victory, so to speak. We see the pilgrims continuing to walk through. We see them moving forward. And then this exhortation of essentially continue on, fear not, right? To be here in this place is a fearful thing, he says, but fear not. Look what just happened, essentially, right? I find that very, very interesting. I find it very instructive and helpful that Bunyan is setting before us here in this section. I find it intriguing.
Yeah, it's interesting that James, you know, that it's James who gets sick, and mm-hmm. James out of fear, and then Bunyan is using the Book of James mm-hmm. to kind of give us these analogies. The boys actually are the ones that really help us to understand what's happening in this valley. Why does this valley exist? You know, what we read scriptures as, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. You know, we why would God take us to the valley of the shadow of death? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a perpetual question of why do bad things happen to us in the first place? If God is all powerful and he has ordained all things, why does he allow bad things to happen to us? And I think part of the answer to that is, well, we don't have the mind of God, and so we need to be careful about how we let that answer direct us. If we let it direct us to the place where we are angry with God, or we don't trust God, or we want, you know, well, why, you know, I don't want this Christianity stuff. If this is how God is, I don't want this God. I want a different God, which is why, you know, Calvin said our hearts are idol factories, because we were always trying to recreate God in our own image. We want God to be different because we want him to give us exactly what we want, not what he wants to bring into our lives. But the boys here are talking about this valley, and they're saying, and of course, the boys are talking about it, and Christiana is also talking about why the king has given this valley. But of course, this is Bunyan, the pastor, who's telling us. He's answering these questions mm-hmm. because as a pastor, he's getting these questions. Why do these bad things happen to me? Why would God allow these kinds of things? And I think all Christians should be comforted in one sense that all Christians, all the people of God since Adam, have had this question pop up in their minds. This is a very common question for people. You know, we're not alone. We're just like everybody else when we think about this question. But Bunyan's telling us that we experience this kind of turmoil in our lives because it actually prepares us in life to be stronger. You know, James was getting sick with fear before he saw anything. You know, he heard, he kept hearing all these things. And then he's brought to the place he's given spirit, or, you know, mm-hmm. so what's that telling us? That he's being more filled. He's being better taught, more sanctified by the spirit.
He's being ministered to by God. Yeah.
Yeah. He's given these pills that have come in. His fear has led him to become to get the cure that makes him a stronger Christian. So that way, when the devil does come, he can resist. Whether the devil comes in the front or the devil comes from behind, in both cases, they didn't realize the devil was there until he was right there, mm-hmm. and they resisted him. And their initial, you know, that fight or flight instinct, you know, it might have been flight. And that's where their guide, Greatheart, is saying, no, stand strong. We must stand our ground. Mm-hmm. And that's when he flees. And then the lion comes up from behind. Again, it was behind. The new danger was from behind. You're trying to go forward. Couldn't they have just run forward? Well, if that had happened, they would have fallen into we know that up ahead are, first is the mouth of hell, and then there's going to be these pits everywhere. That Christian was thankful that when he got to the pits, dawn had broke, mm-hmm. and he could start to see. And he was thankful that there was now a little bit of light, because if there hadn't been, he would have fallen into those pits. So if they had taken off, to run away from the lion, they probably would have fallen into these pits. But they turn around and they stand their ground, and he leaves as well. So Bunyan, is telling us that this is making us stronger as Christians to go through these times.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I think that it's also, we have to remember, it's important to remember that all of us are different. We all have different fears. We all have different temperaments. Some people can stand up seemingly to, we look at some trial that comes in somebody's life who's a Christian, who stands up in strength, in faith, in strength. And we look at them and think, if that had happened to me, I don't know. I could not have had the same reaction. Well, it's because you're not that person. God only brings into our lives that which he has prepared us for. Like James had been prepared to now handle the fact that there's going to be trouble in front and trouble behind. I don't think he could have handled that if he hadn't had the spirits and the pills. I don't think he could have handled that danger.
Yeah. Picking up right after the lion episode and the resistance that's done there. There's a couple of paragraphs that I just like to read. It's a little longer section than normal that I read, but it brings us from one place to another that I think mm-hmm. is spiritually edifying. So right after the lion drew back and came no further, we read, "Then they went on again, and their conductor did go before them, till they came at a place where was cast up a pit, the whole breadth of the way. And before they could be prepared to go over that, a great mist and a darkness fell upon them, so that they could not see. Then said the pilgrims, 'Alas, now what shall we do?' But their guide made answer, 'Fear not, stand still, and see what an end will be put to this also.' So they stayed there, because their path was marred. They then also thought that they did hear more apparently the noise and rushing of the enemies, the fire also, and the smoke of the pit was much easier to be discerned. Then said Christiana to Mercy, 'Now I see what my poor husband went through. I have heard much of this place, but I never was here afore now. Poor man, he went here all alone in the night. He had night almost quite through the way. Also, these fiends were busy about him, as if they would have torn him to pieces. Many have spoke of it, but none can tell what the valley of the shadow of death should mean until they come it in themselves. The heart knows its own bitterness, and a stranger intermeddleth not with its joy. To be here is a fearful thing.' Then Greatheart says, 'This is like doing business in great waters, or like going down into the deep. This is like being in the heart of the sea, and like going down to the bottoms of the mountains. Now it seems as if the earth, with its bars, were about us forever. But let them that walk in darkness and have no light trust in the name of the Lord, and stay upon their God. For my part, as I have told you already. I have gone often through this valley, and have been much harder put to it than now I am. And yet you see I am alive. I would not boast, for that I am not mine own Savior. But I trust we shall have a good deliverance. Come, let us pray for light to him that can lighten our darkness, and that can rebuke not only these, but all the Satans in hell. So I read that because it moves us from right there, that point of the lions, when there was daylight and the fiend comes from the front, the lion from the back. But then in the midst of this valley and a pit in front or nearby, mist and darkness comes upon them. They were in daylight, right?
Yeah.
And what do they do? But with the thankfully, with the guidance of Greatheart, they stay still, right? They don't just start wandering about in the darkness. They stay still, and eventually, obviously there's more here, but eventually they pray for God to lift up the darkness so that light will come in, and then they can continue on in their path. And I just thought that this whole section, first, that's where you mentioned it earlier, where, you see Christiana have more, even more understanding of what Christian went through. This is where, oh, he must've been lonely. It was dark the whole time for him throughout the journey, except for at the end. So she gets a sense of that a bit better. We also see that the Valley of the Shadow of Death, is different. Their experiences, it's a different experience for everybody who goes through it. The heart knows its own bitterness. They don't know it and know what it's like until they come in on themselves. So you have a variety of different things happen right here in this little section, but it leads you from darkness to light. And that is through prayer at the end of that little section that I read, which to me... I think what Bunyan is doing there is showing you one aspect of how to find help and God's grace in the midst of the darkness that does fall upon one in the midst of the valley of the shadow of death.
Yeah, this is where the boys end up concluding that it's better to go through the valley of the shadow of death. Because like you're saying, you know, they pray for light. They don't pray to be taken out. Right. They're going to continue. They're only halfway through or two thirds of the way through. They're going to continue, but they do pray for guidance and light and an easing of this darkness that's around them. And the boys say that because of this, they love the light more because it has come in this kind of a situation, that God has come and taken them through these difficult times. They love God more because if they hadn't been in that situation, if they had only gone through nice, grassy areas with, you know, in nice 77 degrees all the time and no rain, they might've loved God, but they wouldn't have loved him as much as they do now that they've gone through this difficult time and he has guided them through. And they take it further because it's not just that we love God more in this life because of what he's done for us and how he's taken us through hard times, but they conclude that this sweeter love for God will be eternal. So even in the world to come, they will love God more because they've been through the valley of the shadow of death.
Yeah, and that's a remarkable maturity to come to, right? That's a remarkable conclusion to come to, even while you're in the midst of it. I mean, they're still in the valley when the boys come to that realization and something of acceptance.
Right.
And that's a tremendous place to find yourself because most of us come to that conclusion usually after the fact. And in the midst of it, we are stepping on all sorts of snares and traps and tripping and falling all over the place.
Right. Because Well, and the boys keep saying to a great heart, they keep saying, are we done yet? Are we there yet? Are we out of this? And they're like, because, you know, let's hurry up and get through it. There still is that desire to mm-hmm. be gone mm-hmm. through that valley. And Great Heart keeps telling them, be patient. Be patient. Don't try to rush through this, but watch your feet, because there are traps that can ensnare you. And so it's better to go through slowly, but keeping an eye on what can trip you up, than it is to rush through it, like you're saying, and get caught and stumble.
And they prayed, and that is what helped them through. And it wasn't a deliverance of being out of the valley, as you said already. It was the light that was given to them to continue to see, and they could see, as you said, the snares. They could see the traps that were set before them, so that they wouldn't fall into them. But they still needed to go through prayerfully and patiently.
Yeah, it's interesting because coming up, the prayer is going to actually play a part when they get out. So when we're going through times like through the valley of the shadow of death, we should pray. And when we're not in the valley of the shadow of death, we should pray. You know, it's with this constant reliance upon our King and our Lord in any stage of life is something that Bunyan keeps coming back to, prayer, you know, and something that we, you know, prayer is something that can become easily rote. It's something that, you know, okay, we got to pray for my meal. Now we're going to pray for, we get up in the morning, we pray. And so how often do we find ourselves praying kind of the same thing? And we're all guilty of this. And now there's some things we want to pray for every day, but when we're actually praying and then we realize, well, I just prayed for 5 minutes, but I don't remember what I said, or I do remember what I said, and it's the exact same wording I used every day. It can become rote, and yet it's so essential in our lives that as long as we can remember, we're having a conversation with our Lord, even if we're praying for the same things, as long as it's with sincerity, that's what is important.
Yeah. But we're not out yet, right?
We're close. They're close.
We're close. But when they're not so much a butt, but I did it twice. Look at that. As they walk through and they see the snares, they also see a few, or at least one person dead.
Corpses. Yes. Well, not just dead, but I mean. It says that his flesh is all torn.
Yeah, it's like, this is a children's book.
Yeah.
I mean, just read it here. Now, when they were come among the snares, they espied a man cast into the ditch on the left hand with his flesh all rent and torn. Then said the guide, that is one heedless that was a going this way. He was lain there a great while. There was one take heed with him when he was taken and slain, but he escaped their hands. You cannot imagine how many are killed hereabouts, and yet men are so foolishly venturous as to set out lightly on pilgrimage and to come without a guide. So we get heedless who they see there, and I think what is being said here is that take heed had fallen but escaped. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. He's preserved, but it says he was taken and slain, but he escaped. So I'm not I'm thinking, yeah, he's preserved, but heedless, the one who is heedlessly moving forward.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, I thought the same thing when I read that. I'm like, okay, he's taken slain, but then he went on. It's like, I'm not sure if that's Bunyan misspeaking and it not being caught in the editorial work later. I don't know. Or if he just means something that is stating it in such a way that we're just not getting it. Could he mean that he, take heed, did end up, perishing, but that he endured in that he went to the King, you know, he is now in heaven. He's now in the celestial city.
Yeah.
I don't think so. It sounds like he actually was taken to be slain. He could have been slain, but he escaped and went on.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking now as I'm looking at it again, and I know our listeners are like, come on, get on with it. It appears is that there, you know, that Heedless is the one who is taken and slain. And then but he escaped their hands is referring to take heed. So it's a bad use of sort of the, you know, trying to figure out what the antecedent is for each of these little sections. But because on the side, it does say Heedless is slain and taken or take heed is preserved. So, and take heed.
Yeah, that actually doesn't help. That really doesn't help.
Heedless is the one who is going through impatiently.
Right.
And take heed is the one who is going through patiently. Right. So
we know Heedless didn't make it because his corpse is laying by the side of the road.
Exactly. Yeah. And then take heed is preserved, we're told. So anyhow, the point is go through patiently and not foolishly venture on. Do not take the pilgrimage that we are on lightly. I think that's the point because that's what he says.
Right. Right? So how would you, as a pastor, how would you see this being practically applied to people today, that if they're going through a hard time, going through, you know, their own valley, the shadow of death, how could they, example wise, be heedless in how they're going through?
Yeah, well, okay, let's just say, I mean, there's going to be a lot of different ways to answer that, but take for example, they're going through some sort of trial and they don't take it seriously. They don't prayerfully consider the trial that they're in. Ah, it's no big deal. God will take care of me. And I'm just going to go along with life and, you know, let go and let God. And, you know, no big deal. You know, all these things happen. You know, I'll be fine. And not consider their way in the midst of the trial. Not consider the seriousness of the trial. Mm-hmm. Let's just say, for example, someone is seriously ill, let's just say, and they just aren't concerned in a serious way about their illness, in the sense that they just continue to live life without any concern for their health and well-being. And I think a lot of times, you know, poor health is brought into us or to us to help us slow down. Sometimes just, you know, and I'm thinking now just a basic cold, right? Sometimes just consider, just consider the people, you know, that get colds. Well, this is pre-pandemic. I'm thinking now, but you consider people when they get cold, right? I mean, sometimes they just don't stop. And God is saying by debilitating the body for a moment or two, just stop, take a rest. I don't mean to be frivolous in that.
We're trying to come up with examples.
Yeah. Of how we can be heedless in life, and we can be heedless by not considering our ways, not considering, not being patient and thinking through and prayerfully thinking through the various concerns that we are finding in our lives. We've mentioned this a few times on the program now, in one way or another. We're considering as a congregation our situation of our building being up for sale and us needing a new place to worship because our building's for sale and our offers for the building have been rejected. Statements of fact, okay? So our session could be heedless and say, all right, we're out of here. But you know, we're not going to be worshiping here, but next week we don't know where we're worshiping. So, everybody, take a moment and, let's see. Meet at the corner over here and, the Lord will provide. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm being frivolous, obviously. That would be
I understand.
Heedless. I would hope no session would ever act that way. So what are we doing? Well, what's the name? We're taking heed. Of the dangers that could pose to the life of our congregation by not being foolish. So we are considering slowly, deliberately, And some people like, oh, she's too slow, right? Not that some people might consider the way that we approach it too slow. Who knows? But we're trying to make wise decisions by considering the various ways in which we should move forward, by looking at properties and so on. So that's one. It's a building thing. That's one example. But right. It could affect the life of the body if we were heedless and impatient and not thoughtful, not prayerful. And it could destroy the body by not having a place to gather and assemble without being thoughtful about it. And consider, deliberate. I think there are dangers that are in front of a congregation in that circumstance. And if you are heedless in that, it could hurt the body as a whole. But if you take heed of your present place, your present circumstances, and you move forward thoughtfully, considerately, deliberately, prayerfully, considering the options before you that God has set before you, then you are more likely not to find a snare, not to fall into a pit in the midst of making that decision of how the congregation moves forward, right? Now, you know, I mean, this could be multiplied in the various ways in which a congregation goes or an individual goes through the process of making the decision or the process of living life or the process of walking through a particular trial that is, you know, could be soul destroying or could be soul edifying, right? It could be built something that builds you up, or it could be something where you, like heedless, find yourself falling into the pit and soul destroying. And so I think that's, I don't know, maybe I'm just going on and on and on now, but that's how I see the contrast that he's making here by heedless and take heed.
Right. I always think it's good to try to bring it down to a practical level.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, the boys through this, especially with James, I mean, what does he learn? He learns to rely more on the Spirit, to take the teachings of the Word of God and let them be a medicine to him. And he is able to, even though he's still afraid, he's able to withstand against the devil when the devil comes again. They all have to do this. They all have to withstand the devil when he comes and attacks in front, and then when he attacks in the rear. And it's this lesson that they're being taught through this time, because that's why God's bringing them through this. They can learn these things. They learn that they need to rely on prayer to make it through these times. And, you know, they could have just said, well, let's hurry up and run through, especially when the lion came behind. Let's get out of this as quick as possible, instead of going through it at the pace that the Lord has set for them, that through the prayer, the reliance upon God, even when you're blinded, you don't know where to go because darkness has surrounded you. But through prayer, you start to see the light, and you start, even though you want to go faster, but the boys kept wanting, they wanted to be done, which is a not a bad thing to want to be out of that kind of situation. We shouldn't want to be in those situations, but it's wise to allow the Lord to do his work in you, to teach you the patience upon him, that your faith is increased, that we learn to have peace even during trials, that the fruit of the Holy Spirit is developed within us. This is how, you know, through these kinds of tribulations, we are what endurance is built, not only for ourselves, but that so we can instruct others. And as the boys end up saying, that they're glad to have gone through this because it gives them a sweeter love for Christ that is going to be an eternal benefit, even though they still want to keep going faster. That's their desire. Again, not a bad desire, a natural desire, but if it's going to come at the expense of learning the good things that God is trying to teach them, then it's actually a bad thing. And that's the same with us. When God is teaching us to be more patient, to rely upon him, even when we don't understand the circumstances we're in, you know, we lose our job and we're looking for another job, or we lose our home and we have to find another place to live, or someone that we were really good friends with, all of a sudden we've lost that friendship. I mean, things like that weigh on you. And when you're being pulled through those kinds of times. Maybe you're sick or your family member's sick, and it's been years that you've been enduring this, and you're being dragged through this what we would call a valley of shadow of death. The good things that God is teaching us have an eternal value, whereas the temporary struggles that we're going through that are producing them is only something that we're going to have to endure temporarily.
You've mentioned a couple of times that the children were longing to see the end, and you said that's not a bad thing to have. And I think you're right, but I do think Great Heart gives a little bit of a warning to that having that look as well. And when he says, on they went, and Joseph said, "Cannot we see to the end of this valley as yet?" Then said the guide, Great Heart, "Look to your feet, for you shall presently be among snares." So he doesn't rebuke or anything like that. But I think what he's saying is just don't look too far ahead.
Right.
Such that you will trip and fall in the midst of the trial.
Right.
Right.
It's not a bad desire, and it's not a bad desire to want to be out of a trial. But it's what we do with that desire.
Right.
That can be wrong.
Right. It could be such that you are so longing and heedlessly, right, trying to get out of the trial that you then trip and fall and find yourself going in worse conditions than you would have been otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so the warning is to keep watch over yourselves as you are making your way through this, that you remain faithful, that you remain steadfast, you remain walking the path of righteousness through it. Because, in the midst of trial, we're all tempted to do certain things that we wouldn't have done normally because there's pressure, there's anxiety, there's worry, a variety of things that can come upon us, fear, in the midst of that trial. And the desire then is to remain faithful through the hard time as well as the easier time, so to speak.
Right. And then, very soon they have to, obviously they have to wash their feet, but they do come out of the valley.
Yes. Yeah.
They do finally make it out. And you would think, and this is kind of what prompted some of my opening was, you'd think here they just made it out. Going through the valley of shadow of death is not a pleasant thing to go through, but they've made it out, and immediately a new trial faces them, and it's actually going to be a much tougher trial than they experienced in the valley. But they learned something, I think, in the valley that helps them make it through this new trial. And they when they get out, they see the cave that Christian had seen. It's the cave that Pope, or Giant Pope, was lying outside of dying. So he was, Catholicism, this was representing Catholicism, that it was almost done in England. That's kind of what Bunyan is saying. And maybe even other parts of Europe, that Bunyan is saying, look, Catholicism is it's gone. It's almost dead. And back within the cave is presumed dead Giant Pagan. So paganism, which had been there before Catholicism even came, was long gone. Now, I think Bunyan was a little premature in his prediction of both paganism and Catholicism being dead. But when Christiana and the boys and Greatheart, when they come out, a new giant comes out of the cave at them. And this one is a Giant Maul.
Yeah.
Not Darth Maul.
Yeah, Maul.
Maul.
M-A-U-L.
It's not M-A-L-L.
Yes,
that's,
yes.
That's good. We want to make sure.
Spell that for everybody out there. This is not the giant consumerism.
They were not attacked by Sin. Cinnabon and Books of Millions.
Yeah. No, but this is the giant not of, you know, paganism or Catholicism, but of what he calls sophistry.
Yeah.
Or, as dictionary defines it, the use of fallacious arguments, especially with the intention of deceiving. So he uses sophistry to deceive the pilgrims along the way. What a different kind of giant this one is.
Right. And I think it's interesting because although, you know, this giant Maul was not a pilgrim, not a Christian, not a citizen of the king's kingdom, but the arguments that are used, or at least this was, maybe I'm stretching this because it seems like Bunyan is trying to say is that these arguments are arguments that you'll find within Christianity. Like, not that they're Christian, but that Christians have to deal with, and Christians are pulled away from the road because of this. Cause it says that giant Maul has actually led away many pilgrims. And it seems that the way that he leads them away is by deceptive arguments. And it just made me think it's people within, maybe even within Christianity, that are giving arguments that actually take you away from Christianity. What do you think about that?
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. I'm not sure what to think about with regard to that, from arguments coming from within Christianity, because I don't know, the argument that he gives here is that ministers are kidnappers and stealing
right.
people out of Satan's kingdom.
Right. I mean, this giant Maul has a relationship with Greatheart. They've
right.
actually done
yeah,
battle.
Yeah, they've
before.
Done battle before.
And he accuses Greatheart of being a kidnapper, specifically of stealing women and children out of his master's kingdom. This is actually the same argument that Apollyon gives Christian when he meets him in the Valley of Humiliation.
I didn't remember that. Okay.
But Apollyon, though, is the king of the kingdom. And he says, you are a citizen. You are a citizen of my kingdom.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And you have, you have no right to, you've rebelled against your king. And Christian says, you're right. I was a citizen of your kingdom, but I no longer am. And that's kind of Greatheart comes back with, I'm a preacher of the gospel. I'm only bringing those out of the kingdom who have turned to the gospel. Yeah. So it's definitely within the same argument line.
I mean, you may very well be right with regard to the arguments from within Christianity that we're drawing people away by deceitful methods, but I'm not.
Yeah. I
don't know.
I guess the reason why I thought it is because of the deception, because Apollyon, I mean, in one sense, when you go back and look at what Apollyon said, a lot of what he said was true. You know, you are a citizen of my kingdom. Well, Christian was a citizen of his kingdom. And then he brings up to Christian all the times that he failed. Well, he's telling the truth.
Yeah.
But Giant Maul is specifically using deceitful arguments to try to lead people away from the road.
Yeah. I mean, you're thinking.
And that's why it made me more of he's using the Christian's arguments against them.
Yeah. You're thinking of the deceitful and false teachers that we get in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John,
yeah.
Jude, and
yeah.
things of that nature. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking mm-hmm. of. And I, like I said, you know, sometimes I stretch a little bit on what Bunyan was trying to say, or maybe I take it a little too far. But regardless of whether or not this is within Christianity or without Christianity, the arguments that are being used to lead the pilgrims away mm-hmm. are deceitful.
Yes.
So they're trying to say, you know, here's the argument, but really it's really just trying to lead people away from what they even know is true.
Yeah.
Cause they're
yeah.
being deceived.
Yeah. I mean, him using the language of, so this Maul did use to spoil young pilgrims with sophistry. Right. So, I mean, that has a definition, and that definition is it's the use of fallacious arguments with the intention of deception. So, there's no doubt about it. It is definitely false argumentation, and that is a known right, known to be false argumentation. So they know that their argument is a fallacious because the desire is to deceive those that they are arguing with. So that obviously that is the desire is to turn people out of or turn pilgrims off the road in a false way. Go ahead.
So even though Greatheart and Giant Maul have they must have had arguments before, because now they're going to actually have a battle. And it's the way that this battle is described, it kind of reminds me of a boxing match where they have rounds. Although this kind of if you've ever read anything about chivalry and how knights are supposed to do battle, this actually has a lot of chivalry.
Yeah.
Within it, the way that they're fighting, because right. they do battle and then they both get winded, and so they take a break. Right.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm a little sleepy.
Yeah. Right. And at one point, I'll wait until you catch your breath. Before I kill you, I'm going to wait for you to catch that. That's Arthur, Knights of the Round Table, chivalry. That's incorporating that in there, when they go to take their first break, the giant, he sits down, he's catching his breath, and Greatheart, do they suggest to him, to catch his breath or whatever, but he says no, let's pray. Mm-hmm. So he used that time to pray. And it's just an interesting, that again, what did we learn going through the Valley of the Shadow of Death? It's that prayer is or should be our go-to in any trial. So they took they take the break, Greatheart and the group, they pray. Then they go back to battle again. There's some wounds inflicted on both sides, but Greatheart stabs him a really good blow through the fifth rib, we're told. I mean, very, very specific. Then they take another break, and that's when Greatheart is saying, well, I'm going to let you catch your breath. And then they come back to fight again, and that's when Greatheart takes his head off. So it's like, okay, catch your breath, because I'm about to...
And the women rejoiced.
there was much rejoicing.
Yeah.
And so then they take his head, and they put it on a pike. They stick it in the ground and put it on a pike as warning, and make a little, that's Bunyan loves to do this. He loves to make like little plaques.
It's a pillar. Yeah. It's put on the pillar.
Yeah. But then they have the plaque, that mm-hmm. kind of talks about what the great heart's victory and everything. And they, but I think that the spiritual lesson here that Bunyan's been trying to teach us is that when you're going through trials, that it's prayer that's going to be your greatest asset. And especially here, Greatheart, he's going through a struggle against, now it's much more than just walking through the valley. Now it's actually doing physical combat. And when he has the time, he prays. And then he goes back to the combat. So the important thing to us that trials will come, but it's prayer that allows us to obtain the victory.
All right. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode. Of course, we are a podcast of the Reformed Forum, so go to reformedforum.org to find out more about that organization, as well as all the other wonderful stuff going on. And check out, if you are especially in the Texas area, the upcoming...
Austin, near Austin.
Austin, yeah. In the Texas area. Texas area. It's a big state.
Near
Austin. In Pflugerville is this year's Reformed Forum Conference. And so you want to go to reformedforum.org/conference. to check out the early bird special, which I think is still going on. I can't remember offhand. In order to get tickets and go to the VIP dinner beforehand, which is always a great event. Also, if you want to find out more about the congregation that Rob and I serve, please check out westminsteropc.org for other OP congregations, chicagoreformed.org in Chicagoland area. Rob, what are we going to find out next time?
The next time we learn how to be honest.
That's always good. Well, again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.